Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hello, and welcome to the show. Today, I have with me Bev Ehrlich. She is a transformational coach, and she has been helping people get clear on their vision, working from both a practical and spiritual level to help clients really become open to all possibilities. Welcome to the show, Bev.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's so lovely to be here with you.
Yes, it's so nice to have you, and it's so nice to dive in a bit deeper into this conversation. To note for the listeners, I am currently sitting in New York and Bev is currently sitting in Israel. So it's the coolest thing to be able to have this connection and be able to have this conversation today. So I'm really excited about that.
Right. I think that's one of the beauties of being able to use technology for our connection today.
Absolutely.
You know, even when I bring in a spiritual nature to our work, it's not about just being in a cave. It's really being in this world.
That's great.
That's one of the things that technology has offered us.
We're super lucky to have that. And yeah, it allows us to go and reach out to people in all areas and corners of the world. So yeah, it's awesome. So you and I met recently and we started to very quickly recognize that a lot of the work that we do has great similarities in bringing people, you know, into that clearer space with themselves. And I wanted to dive deeper into that and get to know more about that work and really, I guess, start from the earlier stages of, you know, when did you start becoming and working with people on the transformational level? And, you know, how has that progressed for you up until today?
Right. So I would say over the last year, the real transformational work has started taking place. When I realized that we're so conditioned to living in our heads and we're trying to fix things and we want certainty and there's so much more to us, I realized. And I noticed that people were still living in trauma, still had stresses, and they would seem to forget that there are other parts to themselves. There's a body, there's emotion, there's that spiritual core nature that we weren't tapping into. And what I've been privileged to learn and see in action is that really trauma is so healed with the relational space. Just what you and I are doing now, we're here for each other. Just before we got on the call, you said to me, is your phone off? I said, my phone's not even in the room with me. Just to be able to spend some time presencing with someone is so healing. Because most of our pain comes from attachment, from the relational space. And healing comes because we don't live in a cave. We live together. So that's what the last year.
Right. And to recognize one another and to sort of hold space, if you will, for each other.
And not to fix. Let's look and notice how you're feeling. And that awareness in itself brings a calming healing.
It validates a person's feelings and it validates an experience that they're having without trying to, like you said, fix. And I often find, and I agree with you, that when we try to fix or solve, it almost feels as if we are dismissing the very situation or crisis that may be occurring. Or if not that, we're almost dismissing the very feelings that are coming out of it. And sometimes, well, often, as we both know, that is something that just needs to be felt and dealt with. And you're right, just seeing someone is often all that is needed in that moment. So,
yeah. You said that so beautifully because I feel that most of our life is lived with what I call distraction. We don't want to look. And that dismissing is, it makes me feel uncomfortable if you express despair or hopelessness.
Right.
But if I can take my agenda out of it and just quietly, in silence even, hold that space together with you, the fragmentation that comes from wounding brings us together.
Isn't that just it, though? I mean, I think it's so much That's exactly it. This is actually something that maybe it frustrates me a little bit, because I think that the discomfort, if we remove it, as you've just described, we actually get through the situation so much quicker. There's so much less discomfort suddenly. It's like pulling a Band-Aid off, really. And all of a sudden, the connection becomes that much closer and more aligned.
Right.
Just over that like blip of okay, let me just not feel uncomfortable right now. Let me just sort of connect with you instead of kind of warding you off.
That's where I feel true love comes from. It comes through a pain. It's not when we love each other and then we're now having an argument, we should separate. Let's look at the argument. And then see if we can't be drawn closer together and be more precise with each other, accept each other for the way we are. And it doesn't matter what the nature of the relationship or the depth of the relationship. It's about taking that pain, holding it, looking at it, and then we can come together at a deeper level.
And don't we do that with children when they fall? We just take them, we look at them, we like, you know, it's okay. We put a Band-Aid on their knees and off they go. And they know that they're safe with us and we know that we're connected and we're, you know, a safety net for them. And off they go and everything continues to move on. And so what we're trying to talk about and describe today is really the emotional side of
So lovely what you said, because at some point as parents we forget that. We forget that when our children fall, they just want to cry or be held.
That's it.
And then we stop. We say, no, you know what, you can get over this, or little boys don't cry, or big boys don't cry. We start giving them messages that it's not okay to feel.
Yeah.
And then we see those symptoms and trauma coming up at a later stage and in other relationships.
Doesn't it though? Doesn't it? It must go somewhere. So you've been for the last year doing the more transformational work, but where did this really start for you in terms of your own work, and where did this begin for you? Because I know you've been doing this for like longer than just the 1 year.
Yes.
But where did that really begin for you in your life?
Right. So when I came to Israel, I worked as a teacher and I have a background in psychology. And then I was noticing that I was not turning up exactly as I wanted to. And I thought, I would like to be one of your students, you know, time to move on. And that was very scary because I had this great paycheck. I actually had a fabulous job.
When did you move to Israel?
Over 30 years ago.
30 years ago. What first, can we just back up a little bit just to give some context to the story? You were born and raised in South Africa. 30 years ago, you moved to Israel. What actually brought you to Israel to begin with?
Well, as a Jew, I think I always felt that Israel was home.
Okay.
And I kind of felt I wasn't going to date anyone who didn't kind of see the world like I did in that way. And I met my husband, and a year after getting married, we came to live in Israel, and all our children were born here. We, in fact, have a little bit of a tribe now. and that was a great and big dream that was beautiful to accomplish together. And then as I was telling you about working as a teacher, I realized I wasn't showing up and I needed to make another transition. And one can always build on a successful transition. So here I had taken my life, successful life and happy life in South Africa amongst family, and started afresh here. So I started taking all kinds of coaching courses, and I began, and one of the courses was in dream coaching, which is very practical, how to accomplish a dream. You so beautifully used one of the first steps before our conversation today. What is our intention? Why are we on this call?
Yes.
So there are beautiful practical steps, your intention, your integrity. Part of the steps is creating a dream team, surrounding yourself with people who support your mission, support your dream, because we never, ever create anything by ourselves. What are your beliefs? What are your doubts? What are your fears? How do you work with them? The work is fabulous, but I felt there was something missing. And that's where the transformational work comes in. That's a little bit more spiritual, that goes into the contemplative, meditative areas where, if we're spending most of our days in our head, we're creating a space where our heads are so full, we're creating a space for creativity, confidence, and clarity to arise, which can't arise if we're so busy in our heads all the time. There's just no space.
Right.
So I combine those two. I take the practical steps, but I also work at a deeper level.
So at this point, in other words, you're moving from, okay, we are not just looking to become unstuck and move into this next place of our lives, but really, in order to do that, we need to almost quiet our brains and quiet ourselves so that we are not in our own way, essentially, in order to then move on. Okay. No, I mean, that's fantastic to go from, you know, to start in, and I think many of us do this, we'll start in our coaching fields or in our counseling work, and then quickly understand or where it makes sense for us to sort of morph into the parts of it that we feel make most sense. And really, I think it becomes based on who we end up becoming attracted to and for in the work we do and how we feel that.
So need. Some of that transformation is looking at people's lineage, all the what's been brought down to you on at a personal level, and as well as the collective level, the group that you belong to, the religion, the society, whatever it is. Our parents generally pass hurts down to us, our grandparents. And we find we call them patterns. We come up against the same challenges. I would always say within our relationships, again, no matter what the nature of that relationship is, and the only way to really heal it is not with a self-help book, but is in the presence of someone else who can hold that space for you, with whom you can feel safe and look at that shadow work, go together into what's a little bit more challenging.
Well, if the books were the only way out of the dilemmas and challenges that we are in, there would be no work to be done for really a host of practitioners out there, everything from coaches and counselors to social works and psychologists and onwards. So, no, I fully agree with you that it often takes a different type of connection, the physical presence of another, to often almost absorb off of you and allow you to clear out. I mean, I often feel that. So when I work with people, I feel like I'm almost a sponge. I'm taking it off of them and allowing them to sort of unload whatever it is. And even if it's sitting in the quiet, that's powerful. You know, it's really powerful
Very
to
powerful.
Be present for someone. So, oh, that's such a super kind of journey and experience. But I have to ask, because I find that this is also quite often the truth. You know, when you're going from being a teacher and you're looking to now transform your life into more of the coaching kind of work that you do, where in that space was there the clearing and the transformation for you? Like, what was the personal journey in that transformation that you...
That's such a beautiful question, because part of it was attached with depression, not me myself, but a family member, when I realized that a lot of my intention, my dream steps, were not working for me, and I was responding to the world in a reactionary way. And I noticed that I needed to do the work. So it's not that I'm just able to help others. I am also coached all the time so that I can look deeper, because the deeper I go, the more I can hear what you're saying. If I haven't touched deep parts of me, some of what you're saying to me will be like Chinese, and I won't get it. It'll be off my radar.
Right.
And that's been a fascinating journey. Just like, where are my triggers? What's going on for me?
Right. So it's like almost like, how do you know how to do the work, or how do you even know that that work is important if you yourself haven't had some experience or haven't gone through something where you've been required now to go inward and take a deeper look?
Right. Because we've all been traumatized in some form in our lives. And just to have a look at that and become aware of it and become compassionate. I mean, it's all about being compassionate to ourselves first, to love ourselves, to accept ourselves, and then to be able to help the other. You know, exactly. Hold that space, even when you think your whole world is crumbling around you. Because depression can have that effect. Well, certainly it did on me, on being having to support someone.
Sure. So you're making your own transition. You're looking and inspecting your own life on a deeper level for so many reasons, obviously for your own clarity, as well as, you know, just being drawn to the work in and of itself. And also off to the side, you're dealing with a family member who's having their own experience and kind of going through a darker time. So when you're looking at that work, I mean, did you find that that became almost subject matter for you to explore, to utilize in the work ahead? Or was it a distraction from what you were trying to accomplish? What did that landscape look like for you?
It was definitely material with which to work, but to look at the deeper woundings. Very often the description itself, depression, that was just the superficial. And that it was my family members and not mine. That was all kind of bones for distraction that was thrown out to the world. When I stopped that and said, okay, what's going on with me? Because it's always about coming back to us. Mm-hmm. And seeing what's been triggered in me. Whatever's been triggered are woundings, are pains, are hurts in me. In my case, within 1 year, this family member became depressed, and I lost both my parents. So there was a lot of loss going on for me. So I needed to explore, what does that mean? Right. You know, had I merged the family member with my parents, and now did I feel like everything was lost to me?
Yeah, no, it becomes one enormous kind of
an amorphous dynamic kind of pain,
yes,
if you like.
Exactly.
And instead of being the mature response, being able to respond to my surroundings and my world, I was reactionary. So I was kind of like on a
treadmill.
Yes. Going round and round, going nowhere.
So then if you're in the middle of a lot of chaos on one side and you're in the middle of like learning and teaching on the other side, how do you, and so that I know I've experienced this myself, how do you first come out of that so that you can continue to get the learning and the necessary tools in order to be effective in your work with others? And then on the backside of that psychologically, how do you feel about having your own crisis and dynamic and then showing up 100% for your clients? Because I often find, and I think this conversation is just constant with myself, my friends who are social workers and psychotherapists, that we don't want to come off as frauds, but we know we couldn't possibly deem ourselves as perfect without having our own situations or issues or challenges in life. But there's such a delicate line there.
Right. So I love that you basically asking, do I come in as an imposter?
Well, you know, sure, we all have the imposter syndrome, of course, yeah.
So one of the things I find with my work, that it's so filling that I'm really able to, a few minutes before I sit with someone, presence, and really I'm here for you, and it's not about my agenda. I think because the work is, I can only say, so filling, that the trauma may be uniting us, but I do feel that sometimes people have this image of me as, well, you look perfect, you don't have any problems. I'm not sure how to counter that, you know, unless people sometimes say to me, you know, are you familiar with loss? And then I can answer that question, but I try so much I can really be fully present for my clients, and it's all about them. It's not about my agenda.
No, it's the whole like transference thing. We don't bring our own dynamics and we don't try to work out our own issues in our sessions. Of course not. I think sometimes I know I've experienced in the past, it's like, well, if I'm feeling this enormous amount of challenge or brokenness in this other part of my life, how do I show up for someone with strength? And of course, right. You know, you just like you said, you center yourself and you come into your sessions.
I carry someone to be there for me. I don't just ask people to pay me for the work that I do because I have a value to give you. I walk my talk. Pay someone good money to be there for me. And to be there for me. I'm not interested in knowing anything about her.
Right.
I just love it.
It's your time then.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if we aren't taking care and we aren't doing the same thing on the flip side and finding a place really, quite frankly, to release, whether it's very specific to our own personal dynamic or just to without sharing confidential information, but of course, just to sort of release some of the information that we are absorbing in our own work. There must be an outlet to work through that and to unload it. So yeah, you're right. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk. So it's essential. That's amazing. So now that you're fully immersed in the transformational coach work that you do, and you've separated, I'm sure you're using lots of your talents from your teaching days, just because there's so much that could go into that. How are you finding the response to the work that you're doing now? And how do you feel about having made this change? I mean, you knew you were drawn to it. You knew this was something you wanted to do and move toward. But how are you finding that in terms of the reception in your own community and your own networking pool in Israel?
Okay, brilliant. So I just wanted to offer, before I answer that part of the question, you were saying that I draw on my teaching. I very often have people who come to me who want to make a transformation or transition. They say, I was in high tech, but now I want to, let's say, be a coach. And they seem to think there's a complete divide. But I always say, let's just look at the gifts and the tools that you've got from wherever you've come. We're not going to dismiss them. We're going to integrate them. My work is all
you're
about
building
integration.
On them. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Whatever you've done in the past, that's yours. It's a gift. Integrate it into your next steps. How is the work being received? I would say both and. The people that I've worked with who experience the work, because it really is an experience that I offer, I'm seeing fabulous transformation. On the other hand, because the work is a little bit, I don't know if it's new or it's kind of seems a little bit alternative mm-hmm. to some more familiar ways, I tend to feel that I'm seeing people who go for years to therapy and they go nowhere. I really believe the work I'm doing, and it's not because I'm doing it, it's because I really believe the teachings I've been given are the truth.
Right.
I believe and I see healing and I see contribution from the people that I work with. But I also see that there are a lot of people who are doing exceptionally well as therapists and coaches, but I don't really see the real transformation that they're creating in this world. But yet they're attracting people, and people, I'm not sure what that is that people are working and people
so
are working
I guess-
with them.
Yeah, no, but I guess we could say there's a little bit of something for everyone out there, because when
right.
we think about the individual, often we'll find some are more are prone or drawn to working with someone on a very clinical level, and that makes more sense for them. Whereas you have a entire subset of a population who would never, quote unquote, go to therapy, that it just doesn't feel comfortable, but seeing yes. a coach would be comfortable. And so you almost start at the top of the funnel in terms of how people sort of divide their thinking and
yes.
what they feel is truly accessible to them and makes sense for them. And then, yes,
the
as we go down.
Sorry, yeah.
No, as we go down, we see that. Who offers
right.
real transformation at that point then?
Or yes,
who's,
exactly.
who's speaking to the parts of us that we're looking to really let emerge anyway, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I want to say, the work that I do is therapeutic,
yeah.
but it's not therapy. I do look at the past, not because I want to stay there, but because it's still impacting the present. We very often, a future is innovative, it's new. But we're not creating a future. We're simply taking our past and repeating it. When we quieten down and create the space for that newness to come out, that's when something new can happen. But very often, our future is just a recreation of the past.
Very often, absolutely. And I agree with you on that. I mean, yeah, the difference clearly for us on the coaching side versus the psychological and clinical side was clearly we're not making diagnosis here, but we all must
mm-hmm.
look at patterns. We all must look back and say, how did we get to this point in time? And if that future ahead of us, you would like it to look like the way you're describing, how is it that you're going to get there based on
right.
what has already occurred? So again, makes complete sense and
right.
and
out. I always say I'm not looking to blame your
right.
parents
no.
or understand your parents. I just want to see your imprinting.
That's how it.
How do you understand love? What is love for you?
That's right.
And that's all we want. I'm looking at. I'm not
that's
looking
right.
to blame or understand your parents or make you forgive your parents.
Right.
No, it's just your imprinting.
Right, because how do you move forward if you don't understand how a person's makeup
exactly.
is and what it looks like and where it will take them. So, I mean, it's just, this is exactly the kind of work that I enjoy doing as well, because, there's nothing more satisfying than helping a person pivot into the pathway that makes the most sense for them and that they've been really just desiring but don't know how to get themselves on. And sometimes it is that. It's just unloading or cracking open just enough to let, you know, the air in, if you will. Yeah, so I'm totally with you on that. And I, like you, find that it helps to incorporate, you know, all parts. I mean, I look at a person in a full, whole way. And so, you know, it would not make sense to not talk about, you know, becoming quiet and that spiritual side of a person, because it's very heavily connected to the way in which they do go inward, and they are kind of trapped in their own brain. And it's all of the things that they then consume and think about, spiritual or otherwise. So talk to me a little bit about some of the work and tools that you utilize as it relates to, you know, that part of the coaching.
So I just wanted to say that the meditative, contemplative pause or prayer, if you like, are also a reaction to our busy, busy lives. Our lives are at such a fast pace that on the one hand, we want to calm down. We want to settle our nervous system. On the other hand, we want to make space. We want to give our soul a shower, if you like. Just like we give our bodies a shower, we want to also shower the inner parts. So I love your use of the word tool. So when I combine the dream coaching work, the tools I often use are actually worksheets. I just want to say something about tools. I'm not mad about the use of tools. I'm not crazy about it, because it tends for me to distract me from my, it becomes my agenda. How can I fit this tool into the session we're having? Okay. Whereas if I put that aside, I can really be present with you and see what comes up. But if I come like, oh, I think this would be a great tool. But I do very often start with, I'd like to see your biography. And I've seen amazing things come up. I've seen people write where no one else exists in their world.
So it's almost like let them create their worksheets. They're creating their own.
Exactly, your biography.
Yeah.
I do like to have the vision be given bones. So sometimes I'll ask for, let's do a vision board with a visual statement. But not every session will there be that kind of tool. The other thing is that I do like to ask what a pearl of wisdom the client takes it every time about themselves, not about me. Oh, baby, you were great to work with. No. I want to hear that one. What insight have you gained about yourself? And what would you like to commit to try and doing within the next week that will move you forward? And then it's, if you can't do that, if the next week you're like, I just didn't have the time, whatever, to explore that, not to come with a no, that's really bad. Not to be paternalistic. I know all the answers. I am not the expert. Yeah. What I like to say is my client is in the driver's seat, but I'm the navigator. I've got the map. But they will decide when they put their feet, put on the accelerator, when it's on the brake. But I have the map of where we're going. So we're going to do this together.
Perfectly put.
I don't have a magic wand.
Right. And let's face it, I mean, like anything else in life, and I think that's, you know, that's the whole point. We can be, you know, shown and guided, but if we're not taking those steps and we're not making those decisions, there's no stickiness. Exactly. There's just no stickiness to it. I mean, it becomes, beautiful. I look at it like a diet. If someone just tells you, you have to eat this, you have to eat that, you may not eat all of these other things. Sure, you can follow those directions for like a week, a day, a month, whatever it is, but that's not sticky, because that's not what you've decided feels right, or what you've decided is the most comfortable decisions to be made, food-wise or otherwise.
I love that example, because somebody was just telling me, you know, she wants to find a partner, but she hates dating apps. And the coach was saying to her, well, you need to spend more time on the dating app. And I was thinking, you didn't hear her.
Yeah.
There must be other ways to meet people other than dating apps. And just like, I'm not mad about using Facebook. I like this kind of thing for conversation. So it's listening in. That's like one diet doesn't fit everybody.
No, it does not. It does not.
I love that you brought that example up.
Yeah, well, you know, I just feel like with everything in our lives, if we aren't making the decision and it isn't coming from a place where we feel right about it, and it makes sense to our brains and to our bodies, we probably won't stick with it. We probably won't incorporate it in all the ways that are supposedly beneficial. It really has to be our ideas, you know?
Absolutely. And I think the benefit is that it can be sustainable, but not necessarily forever, because that's the beauty of being open to lifestyle changes.
Right.
You know, but you want to also give it a chance.
Right.
So let me see what my life would look like without sugar. Doesn't mean it's forever, though.
Absolutely. Well, and that's a perfect example, because then it becomes a function of, if I'm open and willing, I can go down this path. I can see how it feels. And then I can return to what I've been doing all along. And that will actually be a terrific experiment, if you will, your own self-experiment of, well, now I've isolated something and I can really get a better sense of how it makes me feel and how I respond to it, because I've separated it from the norm of the routine and I'm just looking solely at that. And that could pertain to sugar and foods, or that could pertain to relationships and
physical environments. Exactly. I don't have to go on the dating sites.
100%.
I'll isolate that, right. Or I will go on there, or I will advertise to Facebook.
Like, how does that make me feel?
Exactly.
Does it bring joy? Is it comfortable or completely uncomfortable? And do I understand that now?
But because of the nature of our lives, where, let's say, I'm bringing up Facebook a lot, you can see where I'm not comfortable.
Yes.
Where we see things as so perfect
in
other people's lives. We think, but everybody's there. Everybody's on the dating site. I suppose I should be. Everybody's on Facebook. I should be.
Yeah.
Right?
I enjoy the more I hear that others are feeling the same way, like you've just expressed, you have a dislike for Facebook and for certain social platforms. I'm happy to see that. I am happy to hear that. Not because I may feel the same way, but because I like that people are getting off of this ride that they thought they were supposed to be on, and they're thinking and feeling and doing for themselves, and kind of removing the idea that if you're not on it, you're not something, or you're not in the right lane, and that's simply not true.
Well, they always say the only way to show that you really care about someone is by sort of having a conversation.
Absolutely.
And Facebook can just magnify that positively or negatively.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I'm one for direct connecting.
Beautiful.
I find it funny. So now that you have, like I said, a better handle, and you've moved forward, and you're doing this amazing work with clients, how is your family doing with your transformation? And how is your family member who goes through their own sort of depressive states, how do they handle it? And does the dynamic in your home life now look different? Because you're bringing a different energy and a different perspective, I imagine, 100% in your life. And so how is that impacting your family?
So I think on a positive note, I'm very able to be there for my children, grandchildren, if I can. If we're connecting, then we're connecting. I'm not on my cell phone. So that also, you know, as I said, if my nervous system is calmed down, then theirs is calmed down. So that is beautiful. We also have a day where we have no screens or any phone communication in my family.
Terrific.
So those are our positive aspects. But I feel it's a constant journey. It's constantly checking in with myself. What's triggering you now?
Right.
You know, as parents, we need to be asking that question all the time.
Right.
Of course, I've been blessed with the most magnificent children.
Of course.
But we do need to be checking in all the time. You know, they're asking for your time. Are you giving it in the right way? I think the biggest impact is that I think I very seldom give them advice anymore. I just try and listen. And even if my heart's pounding, like, you know, and I so want to, I think that I don't have that need
to tell them how to do
things. They should
tell them what to do.
Yeah. I trust them. That's what I feel. I feel complete trust of them.
That's like brilliant and beautiful, really, at the same time, that, you know, to be able to now come to this place in your own personal life and space where you're allowing all of that you know to be true, to be true for your family. And that is, I'm sure, tough, because that was something you know, a dynamic in relationship that, you know, had a little more control to it at times. And certainly when children are younger, you, of course, are more hands-on. But that's beautiful to kind of give them now space to be their own individuals. And
and they are, they're very different, and they're all living powerful lives in contribution, I have to say, but in a very different way, in very different ways.
Yeah.
And that's just beautiful.
Because they've been able to find their own voice.
Yes, each and everyone.
The whole point, you know, is to give that gift. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So looking like around and just with all that you've been able to now absorb and consume and learn both from your own experiences, but the, of course, what you're taking away from clients that you come in contact with, what would be for the listeners, I really would like to sort of give them things and takeaways. What would be like advice that you have for someone who's in their own transformation or about to embark on a transformation? Maybe they feel trepidation and uncertainty, and it's, you know, consuming them in ways that won't let them maybe walk forward. What kind of advice would you give?
So what I'm hearing in your question, and it's such a beautiful question, is it's all consuming in their heads and they can't walk forward, and very often that's when they try to do it on their own.
Right.
I always encourage people to try and enlist what I call the dream team. Get help. Speak to someone who gets you. From there, see who are the people who can help move you forward. Do you need a connection? Do you need money? Speak it. Just today I was in the doctor's office, standing next to a woman who asked for a CBT therapist. And the secretary didn't know what the woman was even talking about. And I said, hey, man, I've got a name for you. She said, wow, you see what happens when you say something aloud? That happened to me this morning. I really urge, don't do things on your own. Learn about what it is that you want. And share with your family, and even when you meet naysayers on the way, see them as people who have come to realign you. When we decided we want to come live in Israel, the first people were the naysayers that we met on our path. Why did you go to America? You could earn much better in America. You don't have the language. You don't have a place to live. And that just made us stronger in our desire to want to come here.
Wow.
And to improve our Hebrew, to find a place to live, so that so the naysayers also have, the doubter voices also have an important, they offer us wisdoms. I always say, don't necessarily be swayed. Right. Listen.
Right.
You know, find what you're triggered, just listen.
That's a really good lesson, because I think often when someone is making a tremendous change in their life, the naysayers sometimes swoop in and really put the kibosh on things. And if you aren't in a place where you're feeling absolute with strength, you can easily be swayed. So yeah, I love that piece of advice. I think it's really important for people to know, no, clear and focused, carry on.
So check in. Maybe I am on the wrong path. Yeah. Or maybe it needs to be adjusted.
Absolutely.
And to see your failures as teachers as well.
Absolutely. I love that. That's a sound advice. I think it's terrific.
Fabulous.
And I thank you for that. And I'm just so glad I had the chance to dive deeper into this conversation with you and share so much of your wisdom with our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you. It was lovely. We could go on for hours,
but we'll do it again. That's the beauty of this. So
okay, great.
I appreciate you being here today, and thank you again. That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at Dreams Detours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.